You're listening to the Telegraph Cycling Podcast, presented by Trainer Road, cycling's most effective training tool.
I want to be the title sponsor. What's it going to cost?
I think around 10 million.
Yeah, I that's a bit out of my budget.
I have the impression that we are in the place where we have to be now.
Greg had a really bad back all last week. So we caught up on your podcast with me giving him a back massage and him listening to you guys.
That's a wonderful image.
With exclusive interviews and the best analysis on two wheels, this is the Telegraph Cycling Podcast.
My name is Richard Moore. I'm with Ciro Scognamiglio.
Hi everyone, and I have no words to express my satisfaction to be here with you also this year.
Well, it's great that you're kicking off the 2016 podcast, Ciro. Not joined this week by Daniel Freeb and Lionel Burney. We'll be back with them next week, but we are in Mallorca at the Team Sky training camp, one of a few training camps that's been going on. I was at Etics Quick Step the other day. We'll hear some interviews from there later in the show. Have you been at any other training camps as well?
No, for the moment though, this is the first one. But I have to ask, dear Richard, okay, we are in Mallorca, as you said, and we are working. That two lazy guys of Lionel and Daniel, what are they doing now? We are working.
They're working on other projects, Ciro. Daniel last week was at the Giant Alpecin team launch, and we'll be hearing from him about that with some audio from there as well. Lionel is just working on other secret projects, I think.
It's secret? Also for our listeners?
It's secret for the moment. We'll also hear in this show from Mark Cavendish, who's joined Team Dimension Data, of course, for 2016. And I went up to Manchester to see him last week. But we're at Team Sky. We're going to be speaking to some of the riders, hoping to get an interview with Elia Viviani, your countryman, Ciro, later on. You and me and him, perhaps, a little three-way round table.
Why not? Why not? For him, it will be really a key season, because he remained really disappointed 4 years ago in London, because he tried to take a medal in the Omnium and he arrived sixth after a good race, but at the end he arrived only sixth. And so in Rio this year he will try to take a medal in the Omnium, but there are also some interesting news about his program of 2016. For example, he will participate for the first time in his career to Paris-Roubaix.
Well, I mean, I'm looking forward to speaking to him, because he was a real star performer last year for Team Sky, won a lot of races, and I might even put him as favourite for the Omnium, which Mark Cavendish, of course, is targeting in 2016. Should be quite a good event, that, in Rio. Cavendish still to qualify, but Viviani looking very good for that, and he's getting a lot of support from Team Sky to go for that as well. Ciro, before we go in there and do some interviews and get out of this terrible wind, you had some news on Pippo Pozzato, which is a great way to start 2016.
I mean, as usual, Filippo Pozzato is capable to remain in the headlines also if he doesn't win the races. I mean, we have to accept that this Pippo Pozzato is a kind of star. And in Italy, yes, as you said, he appears in the news because a guy from Sicily, a 25-year-old guy, created a false identity on the web in order to chat to nice girls, and he called himself How Filippo Pozzato.
Somebody has stolen Filippo Pozzato's... This is in the Italian news today. They've stolen his identity in order to meet women.
Exactly, exactly. I don't know if someone in the future will steal his identity also to become a cyclist.
I doubt that.
Maybe not, dear Richard, because especially in this second part of his career, maybe victories aren't arrived with so frequently, but why not?
Have we had a reaction from Pippo Pozzato to this theft?
Yes, I immediately wrote him a text message, and I must confess that he answered almost live immediately, so maybe he's very busy, or maybe not. He answered immediately, and well, he underlined that this guy, after he tried to do this identity with him, he changed identity, because Pozzato discovered him, and he changed the identity in a famous Italian actor of Red Lights Heart films.
Okay, so. I think we know what you're getting at there, Ciro. So it's resolved. Pozzato's not being, his name has not been taken in vain anymore.
Pozzato is alive and fight with us.
He's free to carry on his very successful cycling career. He's got two more years anyway, hasn't he?
Two more years with Southeast, and maybe in the future, who knows, maybe a career of about as Hollywood stars with an Italian team manager that our loved listeners know well. Who knows?
Okay, let's head in there, Ciro, and do some interviews. Well, and you'll hear some audio from the interviews we're about to do, and a bit more later on, say, from Mark Cavendish and others. Let's do it, shall we?
Let's do. Thanks.
And we'll return later. Okay, I bumped into Sir Dave Brailsford, Team Sky principal, who's just signed up Chris Froome for another 2 years. That's good news. Dave, we're in Mallorca. This is the place you come to every year for the Team Sky training camp. Can you explain how it works? Because it's a bit different to most teams' training camps. What's the thinking behind it, and how does it work for the riders?
Well, it comes to this time of year. Well, I say this time of year, it's obviously the late autumn, and as the guys start to think about the season ahead and kick back into training. And when we thought about it, rather than do the sort of traditional couple of weeks block here and a couple of weeks block there, we decided that we'd come here and try and get a hotel, take it over exclusively, and then keep it for a couple of months. And we managed, so we've got our chefs here, we've got our staff here, and the hotel would actually be closed if we weren't using it. We've got a great relationship with the owner. And then we see it really as an opportunity to be a couple of things. One, a bit like a drop-in centre. So nobody's forced to come for a period of time. But obviously the weather's pretty good here. So at any time, if the guys in Northern Europe or any parts of, a home, training at home, have got bad weather, experienced bad weather, they can drop in, fly out. But also, it's a great opportunity for us collectively to sit down and spend quite a chunk of time either with new riders integrating them to the team, with new staff integrating them to the team. We do a lot of planning at this time of the year. So from a staff point of view, we do all of the analysis of the Tour, the Giro, the Classics. We do a lot of background work because it's one of the few times of the year when we can all collectively be together for quite a sustained period of time. So I'd say probably 80% of our planning for any season is done in this period of time. So we've got some, obviously new riders, and getting them into the team and get to know the other riders is really important. It's a great opportunity to do that here. So
what are your first impressions? I mean, the big signings, Mikel Landa, Michał Kwiatkowski. What are your impressions of those guys? How are they settling in?
Very well, I'd say. I think it's been interesting over the years. I think probably one of the things I'd say is that, when we started out, we've got pretty much an Anglo-Saxon culture, detailed, we work in a certain way, and I think maybe I'd look back in hindsight and actually think, maybe with some of the guys from the Italian guard, different, sort of more of a Latin culture, if you like, maybe the Colombians and some of the Spanish, I think, ultimately it's our job to try and get the best out of them. And I think, the differences in culture is an interesting one, because I think you can try and force people to fit into our culture and say that this is where it's going to be. Or actually you can think about what's going to get the best out of them. And I think that's where you've got to be a bit more flexible in terms of trying to actually, let's understand their culture, understand how they tick and what's going to work for them, rather than imposing our culture on them, which is, I think, is the kind of natural thing to try and do. And in light of that, that's why we got Zabian, who's a Spanish coach, we thought, actually, there's a lot of that cultural kind of element that, would be of great assistance. So it's got quite a lot of Spanish-speaking riders, and, of course, the Colombians. So that's helped us tremendously in terms of helping to integrate the guys. So to come back to your question, I think for the Polish guys, so Mikel Golas and Killer, as we call him, they fit in absolutely. It feels like they've been here forever. Great. They're structured. The language skills are fantastic. They're great characters, and they've just fitted in brilliantly. For the Spanish guys, I think they come in with a slightly different. They take the time. They ease themselves into a situation. They watch, and it's a different approach, a different culture, and we recognise that. And I'm impressed by the Basques. I must say, of all of the different nationalities that I've worked with over the years, I think the Basque guys they've got fantastic work ethic. their knowledge and sort of education and understanding of cycling and where it fits in their culture is brilliant, you know. But their work ethic is phenomenal. They've got a brilliant work ethic. And they're pretty straight guys. They tell you how it is. And so I really like the Basque guys, I must admit.
Well, you've
so.
Got quite a contingent of Basque. How do you stop a clique for me with those? Because they're quite quiet. You can see they're comfortable with each other and yeah. maybe not so good at mixing with the rest of the group. How do you stop them? How do you integrate them into the wider group?
It's always going to be a challenge, and it is a challenge because obviously people are more comfortable speaking a mother tongue. And, you know, it's interesting that the Spanish guys after dinner they're used to going slower over dinner. They'll all hang around after dinner and chat, and you know they got their own way of doing it. But equally, we do impress on them that it's you know, we are an English speaking team, and it's you know, this team is that is the mother language of the team, and it is ultimately, it's got a British heart as well. And I think if you know that you're going to go to a British team, then I think it is incumbent on you to learn the language, and I think that they all recognise that. And when they're in a group, they're really, really good, you know. And I think, you know, Landa speaks fantastic English; he really does. And so does Bennett. You know, he's really making a big effort. So, you know, it is a danger, but I think you just pull them up and remind them, and it can be managed pretty easily.
This is the Telegraph Cycling Podcast. Join us on Twitter and Facebook. Just search online for the Cycling Podcast.
Before coming over to Mallorca, I was in Calpe in southern Spain, a very popular winter base for lots of teams, including Etic's Quickstep. I met their new signing, Marcel Kittel, for an interview that we'll play in a future edition of the Cycling Podcast. I also met Dan Martin, another new signing, and Brian Holm, the sports director, who has worked for many years with Mark Cavendish, but won't in 2016 with Cavendish off to Team Dimension Data. So spoke to Brian Holm about life without Cavendish and Dan Martin about life in the new team, and here they are now. Brian Holm followed immediately by Dan Martin.
Well, it's a bit more quiet now, you know, like since Kev is gone. Less noise. I mean, for the first camp December, you realise it's a new team, but like after 2 weeks, you know, it's a bit of like getting back in the sort of the same family.
You're joking about Mark Cavendish, but you must miss him. You've worked with him such a long time. You've known him for so long, your friends as well. Do you miss him being around?
Yeah, I mean, he was always like working with Kev. Trust me, it's never be boring. So that was a big chance, you know, not having Kev. You know, like he was always moaning about something, not in a good way, you know. But he, I for sure, sort of miss him. Yeah.
Patrick Lefebvre said that one of the jobs for the team this year was to put Marcel Kittel back on the rails, as he put it. What are your impressions of him? He obviously had a lot of problems last year, but the athlete that you've been working with for a few weeks now, is he somebody who you think is, you know, ready to have a season like he had in 2014?
That would be easy to say. He's going to be the same. He looked really strong here. I mean, with training, he's strong and he's healthy. To say he's going to have the same season, winning 2, 3, 4 stages again, I mean, we don't know. Yeah, I mean, Greipel going to win, Kev, Kittel going to win, I suppose, and we have to wait and see. But for the moment, luckily, everything is calm now and stable on the right track, you know. So I don't know really. Honestly, I really don't know what happened with Kittel last year. There was a lot of the rumors. He got a virus. He was sick. He was starting training too early. Was making me even more tired, you know. I just know what I read in the papers, you know, and I spoke a bit with the team. They say he was training too little, too lazy, and I think when after a few months in the season, we see who was right about that, Christian, you know, so it's not going to be a long discussion.
Is it a risk taking on a rider who's clearly very, very talented, but has had such a bad year, you know, and an awful year last year? Is there a risk in that?
I mean, it's probably a risk with any rider, isn't it? You're taking on that level. I mean, I hope it's a better chance. Such a year, I think it's a bigger chance you're going to have a hell of a year. You know, he's riding good because he's a winner. Like, you saw him in the past winning, you know, he was bloody strong, wasn't he, how he won, you know. And after, I suppose, after such a year, he want to put something straight. I mean, our team, I think we showed the last 2 years, we're going to win one way or another. We're always winning. You know, I'm not too worried about that. And I think that normally he's got a, like, a good influence on the riders, you know. So, like, normally riders coming here, I think we got always, like, 14, 15, 16 different riders winning. That's a good signal, you know. So it's like you're getting into a good circle, and I hope, like, Kittel going to be a part of that, and Dan Martin, you know. And
I was going to ask you, what's Uran and Kwiatkowski as well, but is Dan Martin a good replacement for both those guys in a sense?
Dan Martin is a light version of Valverde, I think. He's good from February to October. He's always around. And Kwiatkowski, of course, he was a piece of art. I mean, he was just good kid. He's so talented, Kwiat. He was very, very liked in the team also. And, of course, I was very sad also when I realized he was going to Sky. But that's life, you know. And but on the other hand, I was happy when I realized, because I called a few times my colleague Johnny Wells. I was asking Johnny Wells from Garmin about Dan Martin, and he was like, honestly, he said also one of his favorite riders to work with, you know, very talented and very hard training gentleman.
It was said to me before that his team is like a big family, and it really is. With the director's kids, apparently, you know, which is it's a really nice atmosphere. And
it must be a big contrast. It seems on the outside, at least, to be a very different kind of team.
Obviously, I'm not speaking from experience of many teams, my second team, you know, but definitely from the outside, it does come across as this super professional and maybe perhaps a bit cold team, but once you're in the inside, it's like, incredibly familiar. And, feel at home right away, and it seemed to have slotted straight in.
It's interesting when Patrick Lefebvre was talking about, you know, the policy of one out, one in, and the name he mentioned was Rigoberto Urán. That was surprising. I would have thought Mikhail Kwiatkowski was a more obvious guy. You're kind of a combination of the two of them in a way. You're replacing two riders.
Perhaps also it kind of says where Patrick thinks I'm headed. I'm getting into the prime years of my career now, and yeah, maybe my future does lie in Grand Tours. We don't really know yet. And I've made the move up to Andorra now, so I'm spending a lot more time in the mountains. Was before it was always short climbs, and maybe that's why I excelled on them. But I definitely won't be leaving my favourite races, the Ardennes, alone anytime soon, but I'm not ruling out the question of going back to my pure climber roots, and and just seeing how far I can go.
One of the aspects last year at Cannondale Garmin was there seemed to be a lot of pressure on you and maybe Talansky, and you know, there weren't the sort of huge array of stars that you've got here. As you look around and see, you know, Tony Martin, Marcel Kittel, Tom Boonen, and all these guys, how does that make you feel? Does that give you sort of comfort, or is there a different kind of pressure that comes with that?
Oh, for sure, you see how huge this team is and the media attention it gets, and there is a certain amount of pressure. But I mean, even last year, I never really felt that much pressure. The teams are always very good at guarding us, and I think it's how your personality copes with it too. I think it's very much a case of it's a personal confidence thing, that we're in this situation for a reason. It's because we're good bike riders, and that's the reason we're in this team. That's why every rider here is in this team, because we're all good bike riders, and the objective is to win the race as a team, and whoever that might be, it's as long as the team wins, that's an important thing, and that's what makes it, like, perhaps takes the pressure off a little bit here, because you have, even if you're on a bad day, there is somebody else to pick up the baton and at least have a crack. And that's where I find it comforting. It's also a case of, like, going into a race, 1 week stage race, Tour de France, whatever, instead of looking at the start stage of 21 stages and saying, right, we've got 5-6 opportunities as a team to win, this team, we go in and we can almost win every stage. There's a possibility on every stage, and there's an objective on every stage, and that's what's so exciting.
So you're still maybe figuring out exactly where your future ambitions will be, but Julian Alaphilippe is a rider who also shone in the Ardennes Classics last year. Is he somebody who you know quite well? Have you got to know him, you know, in your time with the team so far?
I actually talked to him before his successes in the Ardennes last year. You know, I knew him, and I'm a friendly person, so I talked to people in the peloton, and we get on really well. And he was even more excited when he found out I spoke French. You know, so we already have a good relationship, and I mean, together with Bob Jungels as well, it's gonna be really exciting in the Ardennes, because I think even though we're free riders who are very good at the Ardennes Classics, we all have different kind of attributes and different strengths that complement each other well, and I think we can definitely, it can be an exciting set of races, because as I say, we can, if it depending on how the race pans out, we still have a chance of winning.
I mean, this is a team with a great tradition in the classics, and the Grand Tours have always been something that you sense that Lefebvre has been keen to crack. Went close with Uran. Is that something that you've spoken about him with him a lot, and was that a factor in you joining the team?
Not really. It's been it's more a case of me coming to the team, and I think Patrick still sees a lot of progression. Even at the age, I'm 29 years old now, but he still believes that I haven't fulfilled my talent and made the most of the talent that I've got. And that's why I came to this team, because I believe this is the place that I can actually get the most out of myself. And that's why we do this, you know. It's to push ourselves physically, mentally, and I believe this is now the right environment for me to really get to that. Get to the level that's possible, and perhaps fill in the gaps that my Palmares is missing at the moment.
And just finally, Dan, living in Andorra, there's quite a few riders live there. Do you train on your own, or do you train in a group?
I mainly train on my own. I think I'm one of the few guys who actually doesn't leave Andorra to train. I kind of stay in Andorra all the time, and up to now anyway. And it's just that was the reason I went there. So I kind of realised that I wasn't being exposed to the amount of meters climbing that I perhaps needed. And I definitely put down my relative success in the Vuelta Mountain stage. I felt so strong in the climbs, and I think that was down to making that move in kind of early last year, and just spending time riding up and down mountains all the time. And then at the end of the year, after a crash in the Vuelta, I went back there and just did 3 weeks riding up and down mountains, you know, and that gave me the strength to be almost competitive on Lombardia. And it was without racing for 4 or 5 weeks, and I was still near the front-ish until like kind of 50k to go. So it was, I think it's going to be interesting to see what impact that has on me this year, and having that 1 year of living relative altitude and climbing up and down mountains.
From the cobbles of Belgium to the tops of the Alps, you're listening to the Telegraph Cycling Podcast with Richard Moore, Lionel Burney and Daniel Freed.
Back in Mallorca at the Team Sky camp, I spoke to Elia Viviani, the team's Italian sprinter who had a great season last year and is planning a very busy spring. He's off to the Tour de San Luis in Argentina to ride for the Italian national team. Then on to Dubai, Het Nieuwsblad, Kerner Brussels Kerner, World Track Championships, Tirreno Adriatico, Milan Sanremo, Gent Wevelgem, E3, Tour of Flanders, Paris-Roubaix. It's a very busy spring indeed before he has a little break before the Giro d'Italia, and then begins his preparations for the Omnium at the Rio Olympics, where he hopes to challenge for a medal. And one of his main rivals there could be Mark Cavendish if he qualifies for the Olympic Games. Both taking very different approaches. Cavendish has been in Manchester for 3 months training more or less exclusively on the track, and I met him in Manchester before I travelled out to Spain. So let's hear from both of them. First of all, Viviani speaking at the Team Sky training camp in Mallorca, and then we'll hear from Mark Cavendish in Manchester. Here they are.
You had a great season last year, lots of wins. A lot of your wins come very late. You know, you're a rider who seems to not necessarily need a big team around you, but you seem to just be able to time your effort, and you've got that late kick. Does that come from the track, or you know, is that just something that comes naturally to you?
Yeah, sure. From the track, because when you don't have a train, sometimes I have a train. Same in Dubai last year when I have Geraint Thomas, Ian Stander, Luke Rowe, Andy Fenn, Swifty. Yeah, here I can have one maybe of the best train lead out in the world, but sometimes I have, sometimes I don't have, and when I don't have, I need to understand when is the moment to go, which one is the best wheel to follow, who is the rider in the top form in this moment. You need to understand what all these things, and in 1 second you need to decide what you need to do. No, and sure, the track helped me in this, because in the last K you have a lot of situation. You need to change tactic in PAM. You need to are ready. And sure, the track helped me for that.
Is the team supporting you, your ambitions for the Rio Olympics, a lot? Are you being given a lot of time to prepare properly for the Omnium there?
Yeah, with the team. Also, I do in 2012 with Canada. We plan the first part of a season completely for the road season, And we know when we see the road season, say, which one is your focus, Elia? Okay, not Tour de France, because we go to win this, the Tour de France with Froome. And the good thing is the Olympic is after the Tour de France, and sure, that is a good thing. My big focus is Giro d'Italia. You want to try to the classic? Yeah, we try to the classic. And for the first part, I do the track words, but not with specific work. And the team support me after that, because after the Giro d'Italia, we make a line. They don't put in my program a lot of race on the road, and I have all the time I need for prepare the Olympic. But yeah, we have a big focus for the first part on the road, and after that we have 2 months and a half for the where I do sure altitude and a lot of training on the track for improve in what I need to improve. So well, kilo and
yeah, I mean it's going to be a very competitive Omnium. We saw Mark Cavendish recently in Manchester. He's been living in Manchester for 3 months,
yeah.
and compromising, you know, his road training. He's not been doing a lot of road riding at all, just training on the track. Are you surprised at the focus that he's putting on the track?
Yeah, I'm lucky because I prefer to do the first two big events in finish October, first of November, and then do not compromise my road part, road season start. And with this point for the Olympic ranking, I'm quiet and I don't need to go to another World Cup. And I'm really, really happy for that, because if Semikov, sure, I think he compromised some preparation for the road, because if he do really 3 months in Manchester only for the track, sure, when you come back to the road, you can win, sure, the sprint stage, but you suffered a lot on the climb, you suffer a lot in the, I think, for example, a week race, same Tirreno, no? And which the level is really, really high, no? Sure, I think Cav can win in the start of the season stage at Dubai or Santur or where he go. But the problem was if he want to win Milano Sanremo or same this, I think it's really quite difficult, yeah. I'm surprised, yes and not. I think a lot of this, because when I see Cav on the track, I see he really determined for that, and I think, wow. I try to understand, and after I think, yeah, it's good, because if I think Cav, I think he is the best sprinter in the world, because if we see his palmarès, he win all is in my dreams. So every sprinter want to win Milano Sanremo, he win 26 stages in Tour de France, he win green jersey, he win in Giro d'Italia, he win red jersey. He win Kurn, a lot of other classics. Also, he win the awards on the road, the awards on the track. So if he understand he have the occasion to take a medal, I think the Olympic was an unbelievable focus for the all the sportsmen in the world, not only cycling. And if he is really determined, I think... yeah, he's a good one for the Omnium.
Yeah, well, what would you rather win, the gold medal in the Omnium or Milan Sanremo?
For this year, gold medal in Omnium.
Okay, so you'll leave Milan Sanremo for another year. Finally, Elia, who is the greatest Italian sports journalist?
Good one, this one. Whew. Yeah, I think Ciro is on the top. Yeah. I see a few times Ciro, because from when I arrived to this Team Sky, he is the only one come, no?
Yeah.
From the Italian. And yeah, I think from Team Sky, Ciro.
Mark, you've been up in Manchester for a few months now. I mean, you've got a lot of history here. Has it felt, on any level, has it felt a bit like being back, you know, in the days when you lived here and part of the academy?
No, absolutely not at all. Track's actually completely changed since I was there. The structure of British cycling's like really changed since I was here, and I was on my way up in them days as well, you know. So yeah.
What do you mean when you say it's changed? What I know you mentioned the gears and things like that, but in what other ways has the sport changed?
It's just there's two events now. In Olympics, there's two events, and it's quite ridiculous actually that like an Omnium features in the endurance, and three of the Omnium events or sprint events, and three, it's just, you got completely, it's really, it's pretty odd. I didn't realize how much of a full-time job the track was. Now you can't, it's not riding your bike, it's like a rally driver and a Formula One driver, like they can drive cars, and they'll do it, both of them would do each of them pretty fast, but I think they couldn't, a guy couldn't specialize in both really, you know. And
how are you approaching it? I mean, are you training for each event? I mean, how are you spreading the training out, and who's looking after you in that respect?
Yeah, in the endurance kind of events, the road riding takes care of itself. Like me as a road rider, as an endurance rider, as a 30-year-old rider with a base, that takes care of itself. But in sprint events, the kilo, the flying lap, and even the team pursuit, it's so specialist now that, you know, you can't actually train them properly unless you're fresh. And the thing is, you can't get fresh unless you rest up. And then to rest up, you're kind of missing out on endurance training. It's kind of a vicious cycle that you really have to balance quite intricately.
I mean, you're sort of entering uncharted waters here, doing this sort of preparation. You're going to be obviously riding on the road with your new team, going for the Olympics as well. You've made the decision, you're committed to it, but it's almost like an experiment in a way, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I did try last year in the Omniums during the season. They were to get qualification points so I could ride the World Cup as well. And actually, I came off the back of them quite well. I actually did not great in the sprint events, but always got it back in the endurance events. And the new format, the Omnium, with the points race at the end, is suits an endurance rider down to the ground, but obviously you don't want to make too much time up. So actually, I know that the lead up to the Olympics is not a big problem. It's getting selected for the Olympics that's the bigger problem, you know. And that's quite a short term thing, but I don't want to overdo that with detriment to later on in the year anyway, you know. So I've got you know, the guys at British Cycling, Shane Sutton, Heiko Salzfair, the guys that have known me my whole career, and the guys I had big influences on my career. Heiko Salzfeld got me my first pro contract with Telecom, you know. And Shane was there throughout everything, for the whole academy, for everything, saw me grow from a track ride to road. And they know what I can do, they know what I do, especially when I have a number on my back, and that's great.
Presumably, I mean, the guys who you'll be up against in the Omnium, a lot of them are road riders, the likes of Viviani, Gavira, presumably, as well. But those guys they've not dedicated the last 3 months to this sort of training. Might that give you an edge when it comes to it?
No, they didn't need to dedicate it because they interspersed their year with track riding anyway. Like, they're not paid seven-figure salaries, you know, so they can just take time off from the road during the season and do it, whereas I haven't been able to do that the last 10 years, you know. So that's why I have to put a big block in the winter, really, to do that, you know. They qualified before I'd even started my qualification process, you know, so they didn't need to put a big block in during the winter, really.
And the new team, you've had sort of one get-together with them, is that right? You had a get-together last year in Cape Town. You know, you've been in a few teams now, but what's it like? What's the feeling like joining a new team? Is it excitement? Is there a bit of trepidation, you know, that you're in a new environment, albeit with some familiar faces, but what are the feelings like joining a new group of people?
To be fair, I was more nervous when I joined Omega Pharma Quickstep, because I really didn't know anybody, you know. I knew a couple of people, but especially the guys I was racing with, I was real new to the environment. And it was a team with a primary language that wasn't English. That's the first time I'd been on that, and it was it's a prestigious team, and it's a prestigious team that really had its traditions and its roots, and so I really felt I was coming in, and that was I was a bit nervous there for the first few months. But here at Dimension Data, race with a third of the team at least I've been teammates with, and a lot I've been racing with my whole career as well, you know. And I got some great friends there, and actually it was brilliant. We had a great time. Like, we trained every day when we were there, but it was kind of like being on a cyclist stag do for a few days, you know. We really had a good laugh.
The Telegraph Cycling Podcast, brought to you by Trainer Road, cycling's most effective training tool. Pair your power meter with over 800 workouts and 80 training plans to make you a faster cyclist. Visit trainerroad.com/TCP to try Trainer Road risk-free for 30 days.
Okay, so it's been a bumper interview edition, and the extended jingle you heard there was for our sponsor, Trainer Road, sponsoring us throughout the winter. Myself and Lionel have been following their training program religiously. We'll be updating you on that in a couple of weeks. I think the effects of my Trainer Road training were much in evidence today when we did our team time trial. I'm joined now by Orla Shinawee, and Ciro Scognamiglio is back. As I say, this has been a bumper interview edition. We've heard from Dave Brailsford, Brian Holm, Dan Martin, Elia Viviani, Mark Cavendish, and now two more superstars, Orla and Ciro. So earlier today, on the Team Sky Media Day, we did a bike ride, didn't we? But it was a pretty competitive affair.
It was a bike race. We were told specifically in the team meeting this morning, the briefing, that it was a race, not a ride. So we were all taking it very seriously.
Well, Ciro was team a DS, race. I should say. Orla and I were riding. I mean, this is something they actually did last year. They took the journalists on a bike ride stroke race. I don't know if many other teams do that. I think it's quite a good thing. Last year we went out with the riders themselves. We left the hotel. We did the briefing with the riders, left the hotel with them. I think it was quite a good icebreaker. I think a lot of the riders appreciated seeing journalists out of their comfort zone a little bit, and it broke down a few barriers. We didn't ride with them today, but we did do a race with some of the Team Sky staff, and it was good fun, wasn't it?
It was fantastic fun. It was really hard, or maybe that's just me, but it was really good fun. As you say, a really good icebreaker brings everybody to the stage of the day when it comes to the interviews that much more relaxed. The riders know we've done it, even though we didn't do it with them, so that kind of puts them at ease a little bit as well. And yeah, it was just really good fun.
Ciro, you were a DS. You were my DS. You were very confident. Dave Brailsford was in my team, and four other journalists, and we disappointed in the end. We lost by 25 seconds. Brailsford unshipped his chain on his fancy bike.
That's your excuse.
Yes, as a matter of fact, also I was a little bit disappointed at the beginning, because last year as DS my team won, and now as a DS my team arrived second. But you know that I'm not the brain for nothing, and I say that this defeat will become a victory in July, because the goal is in July, not not in January.
No, it's January. It's not in January. We'll come back stronger, won't we, Ciro?
Yes, but as you know, as every year, my main goal is to stay as long as I can near the beach. And I want to thank Team Sky, because they organize always this media day near the beach, because their hotel is near a beach. So
fantastic.
Good goal stuff. Achieved. That's an early season victory for
sure. So we came out and the serious stuff began, because we did our interviews with Froome, Brailsford, Mikel Landa, Mikel Kwiatkowski. We spoke to all these guys. It was also announced that Froome, what's that, Orla?
Kwiatkowski.
All right. Jesus. Honestly, are we going to have another season of that?
No, we're not. You're just going to get it right this time.
Kwiatkowski.
There we go.
Okay. We spoke to all of them. It was announced that Froome has signed a new 2-year contract. Dave Brailsford also told us he has also signed a new contract up to the end of 2018. Now, what do you think Froome is on?
I was wondering this today.
Wrong salary here, by the way.
I'm still chesty from that damn team time trial. Are you being serious? Are we gonna discuss this?
Because okay. I've had a little tip off.
Oh, you cheeky monkey! I would have said then probably let's go four and a half million. Yes, that's my.
Count. 4 million is apparently the figure. 4 million a year.
Get in.
I said my guess was 3 million.
Well, I think he was on close to 3 million already.
It's a lot of money, isn't
Peter
it?
Peter Sagan was
a lot of money for riding your bike.
4 million. Well, I mean, you've got to compare it to other sports, though, don't you? And he's worth that, isn't he? Don't we think?
Because I'm worth it.
I mean, dear Richard, it's always a question of proportion. I mean, you say, for example, 3 million. Well, it's a big amount of money. But for me, it means nothing because, Richard, I want to tell also to our listener that to live the life that I like, I simply don't I simply don't need money. I think so for me, 3 million, one, two, what? It's nothing. I mean,
the question is, what is Giro on?
Well, like, exactly.
Any other takeaways from today? Any other nuggets?
Nuggets.
The funniest thing was I was doing the interview with Dave Brailsford with Chiro, and Chiro had his headline written already. Team Sky, yes. Team Sky are the Barcelona of cycling. He was trying to put these words in Brailsford's mouth. He kept saying, "Would you say Team Sky are the Barcelona of cycling?" But would you? If you would help me out here and just say that Team Sky are the Barcelona of cycling.
Do us a favor.
Yeah, just, and he said, no, I'd say we're the Derby County of cycling. Half an hour later, I wandered up to Chiro and he's hunched over his laptop and I had a look at the screen and he's got there the Wikipedia page of Derby County Football Club.
That is research a la Gazzetta dello Sport.
Oh, they leave no stone unturned.
But for example, also, I could also have the possibility to have Derby County in the future of my screen saver of my laptop. Who knows? Why not?
The one thing I would take away from this trip actually is, on a more serious note, gentlemen, the leadership position of Chris Froome, given the 2-year extended contract, the confidence that he has in himself to commit himself to the team now for the next 2 years, the fact that he's got Team Sky's backing. What I noticed as well, chatting to other guys like Kwiatkowski and Landa, one of the first things they said about the reason for coming to Sky was that they really wanted to learn from riding alongside Chris Froome. Now, given the leadership battles that we've had really within the team until this year, really, I think that really bodes well for his position. I think that everything he's learned over the last year at the Tour de France in particular, everything he'll have gained from that and everything he'll have gained from the failure of the year before stands him in extremely good stead to be a very strong leader. And he seems very confident and just nice and comfortable with himself, I think. Maybe that's the OBE. But he's walking with a nice little swagger, I think.
Yes, I perfectly agree. And I was reflecting on how British fans are lucky to have a journalist like Orla. But I was thinking that in a few words, when Team Sky started their experience in cycling, well, they started as the Bradley Wiggins team in a certain way. Brad was the iconic person of this team. Now he is no longer in the team, and Team Sky now has the image of Chris Froome.
I think that's true, and he is. You can see he's got good relationships with quite a lot of people and team riders and so on. So listen, let's leave that. We heard a bit from Team Sky. We've got more interviews from the Team Sky camp that we'll be playing in the coming weeks. Next week we'll be releasing our first Friends special of 2016. It's Inside the Lab with Chris Froome. More Chris Froome. But that's I was with Chris Froome when he went to the lab for his physiological test. We've got a lot of interviews with Froome himself and the scientists from the lab on that day, and hopefully it's interesting. And that's exclusive to Friends of the Podcast. It's £10 to become a friend of the podcast. thecyclingpodcast.com. Our second Friends special will be a look back at the HTC High Road team and what happened to that. We've got a fascinating interview with Bob Stapleton that Daniel Freeb did. It's really good. And lots of other interviews as well. And we'll be hearing from other stalwarts from the HTC High Road team. I'll be back in 2 weeks with Daniel Freeb and Lionel Burney. I'll be casting off these two stand-ins.
No,
I'm joking. You'll be joining us
have
throughout
you not
the
heard
season.
Chiro, you're lucky to have a journalist like me.
Yeah, no, listen. Hey, you'll be joining us throughout the season.
I'll pay you the money later.
You're the extended.
Euros are sterling.
You're the extended family of the podcast.
I mean, listeners, I only can say that this is only the beginning. You can't even imagine what we are going to do for the future.
Well, the Giro is in our sights this year. We're going to do the Giro daily podcast at Giro. Chiro, you'll be joining us, I hope, on a lot of occasions at the Giro, if you're at the Giro.
I will be there.
Yeah, good.
Or at the
excellent.
Beach.
What would the Giro be without Chiro?
I mean, without me, the Giro doesn't start. So I have to stay
no
there.
Chiro, no Giro.
Exactly. It's a T-shirt, I think.
There we go.
Brilliant. So listen, sign up, become a friend of the podcast at thecyclingpodcast.com. Not only will you get the exclusive friends specials on your mobile phone, but you will support this weekly free podcast. I'll be back in 2 weeks with Lionel Burney and Daniel Freeb. For the moment, thank you very much, Orla Shinawi.
Thank you very much. It's been fun.
And thank you, Chiro Scognomilio.
Ciao. Thank you.
But Richard, you should have said that you have to sign up again to be a friend of the podcast in 2016, because I was a friend in 2015 and sacrificed good nappy money, well sacrificed and well spent, but I didn't realise that I have to do that again in 2016.
Oh, sorry, was that not clear?
It wasn't clear to me, but I'm not the sharpest tool in the box, certainly not after a team time trial, but it wasn't clear to me.
Well, okay, so sorry, that should have been clear that even if you were a friend of the podcast in 2015, you have to re-sign as a friend of the podcast in 2016. It's £10 this year.
Yeah, £10 this year. It was only £5 last year.
That's even more nappies.
That's even more nappies, yeah. But it's worth it, just for you guys.
You've been listening to the Telegraph Cycling Podcast. Thank you to Glass Pear for the music in this episode. For more information and to download more editions of the show, visit thecyclingpodcast.com.